Hey, everybody, this is Brad Williams, and I am the pastor of B4 Church. Welcome to our podcast. My prayer is that this would help you behold God, that you would see him for who he is, that you would belong to community, that you would be everything that you were created to be, and that you would be able to dream beyond the limitations in your life. So I hope you enjoy this teaching, and we look forward to seeing you in person soon.
Hey everyone, welcome to the B4 podcast. My name is Alex.
And I'm Ashley, and we're your hosts.
Yep, and today we're going to have a conversation about conversations.
Communication.
Communication, yeah.
Because it's something we can all be better at.
Yeah, I think that there's a common denominator if you're listening to this podcast, or if you're in the room with us right now as we're recording this podcast. I think generally we want harmony in our relationships, and we know that that requires communication to some degree. But I think we also are aware that we're all not necessarily innately good.
No, and we have different communication styles. Sure. And sometimes what we think is very effective and helpful ends up being the very opposite for the person we're trying to communicate with.
Yeah, exactly. So part of why we decided to do this episode today was, one, to talk about the value of good communication. But then two, we just had an experience together recently. Our whole staff went away and we had this little retreat and we did a workshop on communication and different skills associated with that. We learned a few tools that could be very helpful in interpersonal communication, or if you're a manager at work, relating with the people that you manage, or, honestly,
with your spouse,
any space.
With your parents,
spouse, your kids,
anybody, really.
Seriously, any space, these tools we think could be really helpful. And even if you can only apply them in a few places, we think that those few places would benefit.
Yeah, make a big difference. That's often the case, that some of the smallest tools are the ones that make the biggest difference.
Right,
so
absolutely.
These are not a panacea for all your communication woes, but they do kind of address some common communication problems, which we as a staff have experienced. Yeah. And I think that's why we thought it was so valuable. I was telling Alex before we started that this was the most productive staff retreat we had been on, because I think there were so many tools that were handed to us where I could, even while we were there, see, oh, this would have made this, that, and the other situation so much better if we'd had this common language before we, before this retreat.
Right.
So, yeah.
And, also I think depending on where you're at in this journey, everybody could be in a different place. You could be a communications major and have studied it. And, you might help negotiate treaties across the world and have to, interact with strange dynamics.
Job, but yes.
That would be intense, right? So what I'm trying to say is there's a sliding scale on where people are at in regards to their communication abilities. But the workshop was started with a quote that I thought was really good. And it was about growth.
Yes.
I don't even know who Will Rogers is. Danger, danger, Will Robinson. That's what it reminded me of.
I don't think that's the same person.
I know, it's not the same person, but that's what it reminded me of.
It'd be cool if it was,
right? How cool. Yeah. This is a quote from Lost in Space. But no, it said this: even if you're on the right track, if you don't move, you'll eventually get run over by a train.
Yes.
Now, I know that sounds a little morbid, but I love the picture if the track is metaphorical.
Yes.
The idea is that even if you are growing or you're in the right space to grow, if you don't make progress, you're going to eventually
get run
over.
It's not going to end well for you.
Yeah, whatever it is going to be, right? Maybe a less morbid quote might be a good way to start this podcast.
You may not get run over by a train, but you might just get hit with something unexpectedly that you're like, I thought I did a good job at that, or was making progress. And alas, here I am.
Which is another reason why we decided this might be a good conversation to have today.
Yes, we actually had something happen within our staff that we were like, oh, dang. It turns out that everybody thought they were communicating and nobody actually was.
Yeah. And we all love each other.
Yeah.
We're all for each other.
We all want the project that we're working on to be the best and the best and the most timely that it can be.
Well, and also to serve and represent people well. But we had some communication breakdowns.
We did.
And those communication breakdowns inevitably will hurt people.
Yeah.
Now, that wasn't our intention.
Not at all.
And it's usually not the intention when communication breaks down, but it's now our responsibility to keep moving, even if we're on the right track, to grow, to learn from this, to do our best to not let it happen again.
Yeah.
Right?
To not only pick up the pieces from this time, but also to create new systems and new ways of communication so that we don't end up in this exact same spot again. Because in this particular case, actually the second time that we've ended up in this spot. So we got a little better. It's not a little better, but we clearly have room to grow.
We do.
So it's very timely.
We do. Yes, we do. So we're going to talk about a couple tools, hopefully, that'll help us navigate difficult places and spaces in communication.
Which one did you want to start with?
I think my, honestly, the one that was probably the most helpful for me was the drama triangle.
Which is?
Okay. So imagine, or you, if you can, and you're not driving, draw a triangle, like just a normal triangle, not a right triangle.
Fancy. Just your normal isosceles triangle.
Yes. Do that. And then at the top of the triangle, put hero, in the bottom left corner, victim, in the bottom right corner, put villain. Mm-hmm. Right?
I said hero, that right. Victim, villain. Okay. Yeah. Heroes at the top because they're winning.
Yeah.
The other people are at the bottom.
And this is the drama triangle. And then in the very middle of the triangle, draw a circle. And then within that circle, write the word or the words, the issue.
Okay. So we have an issue that's a circle surrounded by a triangle with hero at the top, a villain, and a victim at right. the bottom.
The reason why this tool is really powerful when it was shared with us was this is often what happens, right? Mm-hmm. So we have an issue, something that—
A real issue.
Yeah, it's a real issue. It's not even made believe.
It's not like the rumor weed in VeggieTales. Right. It's a real one.
My kids just watched that episode. I wouldn't have known what you meant until you said that. But the rumor weed is the creepiest.
Oh, it's terrifying.
It's terrifying. Anyways, you can look that up on Right Now Media. We'll put a link in the show notes. You can watch the rumor weed.
Carolyn just was like, yeah,
she's like,
gosh darn it, Alex.
Yeah, VeggieTales. So I'm way off track, but the issue is in the middle of the triangle, right? Mm-hmm. But if you notice where the people are, they're nowhere near the
issue. They're not even touching the issue.
They're not touching the issue. They're around the issue. Mm-hmm. And why this tool was helpful is because typically when we're going through something challenging or difficult and something bothers us, something was said, something was done, we have a tendency to create drama triangles. Mm-hmm. We look for the hero, the person who can solve the situation for us. Then we look for the villain. You're the reason why this mm-hmm. problem happened, Ashley. And oh, then we look for the victim. It was me. I'm the one who was hurt by this.
Yeah.
And so we often do this to triangulate around the issue and never actually address the issue. Now, the mm-hmm. issue could be a lot of different things, right?
Yeah.
We've made that clear. But the problem with the drama triangle is that it never resolves the issue.
No, it just causes a new issue because I think one of the other things that the person who was leading the retreat was saying was that basically people not only put themselves in a spot as either hero, victim, or villain, or, you know, they also recruit people and in their minds place, they just start categorizing people. So now, like in your example, I guess I am painted as the villain. And so then I might have some lackeys that are also villains that are helping me, that are making this worse. Right. And you're the victim. And also this affected these other four people. Yep. And we really need this hero or somebody. And that could be a real person, or that could even be like, we just need this like ethereal third party to come in and save us because everybody else here is in the other two camps.
When I worked in the restaurant world, hospitality industry, this happened a lot when we had
a lot of drama triangles in restaurants.
A lot. And we had bad management, bad leadership and for a season. And then we had very good management. So it was interesting seeing those two things. But what would often happen is the fellow servers would come up to me and they would say something like, did you hear what happened with John today? That's usually how it starts, right? That's how the drama triangle starts.
Well, and in Christian circles, sometimes it starts with, we really need to pray for John today because X, Y, Z.
Right. Depending on whatever, you know, vocabulary, language, and circle you're in, it's going to sound maybe a little different. But it's the bait on the hook. So that's typically how it happens. Is somebody is coming to you to figure out who are you going to be? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'll be honest, like, 10, 15 years ago, I would get baited into the drama triangles all the time because I have like a hero complex.
Yes. A lot of us do.
Because I want to be the one that helps fix the issue, right? And over time would subtly find myself like, oh, I'm just playing into your thing. I'm not actually helping you solve the issue. Mm-hmm. In more recent years, I found myself often being the one that everyone else is talking about and I'm the villain in the corner, you know?
That's what happens when you're a director.
That's what happens when you lead people and manage people and it's just part of life, right? Mm-hmm. So it's been interesting to like recognize this tool because it made sense of my real life. It really did. One of the questions I asked Scott, who was leading the workshop, was what happens when the drama triangle takes on the game of telephone?
Yeah.
Do you remember that question? Do you remember what he said?
No. I don't remember his response, well, but I do remember asking the question.
So like, it's not as linear as it sounds, the triangle. And the reality is that these drama triangles, as soon as the game of telephone is started, and now we've moved on and told 50 people about this problem, is that it's almost unsolvable now.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's almost like if you imagine the triangle, if originally the walls of the triangle were very close to the issue, as you include more people, the walls of the triangle expand and you actually get further and further from what the original key issue was in the middle.
That's
and now you just have this giant triangle with this tiny dot that no one can even identify at that point.
Absolutely. That's exactly it.
Yeah.
Is the more the game of telephone transpires, the smaller it is that the issue, we can't even recognize the issue anymore.
Yeah.
And there's a huge problem. So the question is, what do we do with this?
Yes.
For one, it's a helpful tool to recognize what we're looking at, but then how does it help us solve
it? Yeah, how do we get out of the drama triangle?
Right.
Which I think part of it, and this actually applies to the VeggieTales rumor weed video, is kind of nipping it in the bud as soon as possible. Because the closer we are to where that original issue is, the easier it is to actually address the issue until waiting until we have 1,000 people involved and there's no longer an identifiable issue.
Yeah, so if you're approached by somebody and you have this tool, you're thinking in your head, okay, it sounds like this issue just happened. I feel like I'm getting drama triangled.
Mm-hmm.
Which role am I being put in? Okay, now if you have this picture drawn, literally you can draw an arrow from the issue towards the hero, an arrow from the issue towards the victim, or an arrow of the issue towards the villain. Basically, those are arrows pointing out to the corners.
Mm-hmm.
But what we want to do is find a way to turn those arrows the opposite direction
and actually
face the issue, move the conversation back to the middle. So it helps having this framework. This is where we're at. And then next, it's important, like you said, nip it at the bud and begin to ask the right questions to move it back to the issue.
And ask the right questions to the right people, too. Of if the issue is an interpersonal one, it's not helpful. If I have an issue with you, it's not helpful for me to talk about the issue with another coworker.
No.
I should come to you and say, hey, I noticed this thing.
Right.
What's going on? Or I have an idea about this thing. Or did you know you hurt this person when you said this thing? Or whatever it is.
Yes.
And that conversation might be more uncomfortable than me talking to somebody else.
Right.
Oh, excuse Carol Ann. She's sitting here. Me and Carol Ann talking about you.
Right.
Me and Carol Ann talking is a lot easier than me talking to you, but I'm building a drama triangle if I'm talking to Carol Ann. And if I go to you, we just avoid that altogether.
Well, I've done this in my immaturity before. Somebody hurt my feelings and I find somebody that I know is going to agree with me.
Yes.
AKA I've turned them into the hero. And now all of a sudden people are talking.
Yeah.
We don't like you, Ashley. You know what I mean? It's like, it's really easy to do that. It's a lot harder to do what you said. Hey, Ash, what you said today, that hurt me.
Yes.
Or do you know what you did today, Alex? That offended someone. You know what I mean? But it nips it right away before the game of telephone.
And not only does it nip it right away, it's actually how Jesus tells us to handle conflict is to go to the person
first.
And then, what is it? Matthew 25? Sounds-ish correct. It's in Matthew somewhere. Carol Ann's going to look it up and it'll be correct in the show notes.
Yeah.
But, you know, Jesus says, if you have a problem with a brother, your first step is you go to that person directly and you try to solve it. And if you cannot solve it with that person, that's when you start bringing in other people. And it's not that you're bringing in, the goal, I think, would be that you bring in other people who love both of you and are willing to help mediate that, not that you start a drama triangle and just pull in people that agree with you.
Well, and, you know, I have a certain personality type that, like, is a little nervous about confrontation and pain. Like I prefer maybe to kind of push those things off and just pretend like everybody's okay. Somebody told me a long time ago that conflict is inevitable. Mm-hmm. Combat is optional. And I like
That's good.
It's like, no matter what, we're human beings and we're going to step on each other's toes.
Mm-hmm.
That's not optional. That's going to happen. But whether or not it turns into an all-out brawl, that is optional.
Yeah.
Like it doesn't have to be that way. And you know, Jesus was confronted all the time by people. He just never returned it, you know, in a combative way.
In like kind.
Yeah, he didn't. And he refused to. And he suffered and died because of that, but also overcame all of those forces at the same time because of that. And so this is not just like a psychological tool or a business mm-hmm. tool. This is actually, I think, deeply rooted in the gospel. I think yeah, you're right.
It's a spiritual tool.
Absolutely. I think it anything that has the ability to reconcile people,
yeah,
you know, it comes from the reconciling God.
Yeah, I think the one place where I sometimes get caught up with like, hey, I don't know what to do, is if like, I think I have an issue, but I'm not sure.
Right.
And I'm like, so sometimes it's like, okay, I need, and I think the key here is to find a safe person that you can process
sure,
of like,
sure.
is this a thing? Was I just having a bad day? Yeah. And Alex said something to me that just rubbed yeah. me the wrong way. And there's really no reason to come yeah. to you about it because yeah. you literally did nothing. It was, right. I totally misinterpreted yeah. because of something else that happened.
Yeah.
Or like, is this something I need to bring to you? So yeah. I don't think it's always bad to be like, oh, I always directly have to go to the person
right.
because there probably are some times and cases in which that's actually not appropriate.
Yeah.
But being able to have a safe person who's not going to start a drama triangle with you,
yeah.
but that whether that's like a professional counselor because they yeah. can't say anything about it or
right.
a spouse or somebody who you know isn't going to get drawn up in the drama,
yes.
but that you can just kind of process and say, is this something worth bringing to this person's attention? Or like, am I actually the one that's at fault here?
Yep.
Because I think, again, going back to the Gospels of that whole get the speck or the plank out of your eye before you get the yeah. speck in somebody else's. Sometimes we can think something is someone else's issue
yeah.
when in reality it's us. And we may yeah. need some help to be able to yeah. identify those situations.
Well, there's a fine line between these two words.
Yeah.
But there's an important distinction between gossip and processing.
Yes.
And that's important for us to recognize. And, you know, it could be a similar situation, but one outcome could be that it's gossip and the other, it could be mm-hmm. a safe place to process. So you have to ask yourself that question
yep.
before entering into that space. But I think you're right. I think it's important. We've had issues like that in the past.
Yep.
We've talked about the magic ratio on this podcast before mm-hmm. from the Gottman Institute and just talking about positive to negative interactions. And you know, like some of our relational toughs over the, mm-hmm. over the years have been like, you know, and we'll talk about change
mm-hmm.
patterns in a minute, cause that's the next tool. But it's like, I'm kind of a, like put my foot on the gas and let's go.
Mm-hmm.
And you're more of the like,
hold on. What are the implications of this?
Right.
What,
right.
We need to think about this
right.
before we do anything.
And you know, sometimes it's like, me just going, Ashley, we need to do this, can feel like a negative thing.
Uh-huh.
And then some off comment is said in the hallway and you're like, is there something wrong here?
Yeah.
And in my mind, I'm like, no, we're all good. It's all great. But our ratio's off.
Yeah.
So, you know, we've done full episodes on the magic mm-hmm. ratio. That was way back in
one of our first episodes. That was with just you and Brad.
Yeah, that was mm-hmm. a long time ago. But it's an important, we'll add it into the show notes. Okay, so we talked about who we need to go to when the drama triangle starts.
Yes.
But we need to now talk about what are the kind of questions that you need to ask.
Yes, because questions are often a lot more soft than just coming in and being like,
yeah.
this is how I feel about things.
Yeah.
But can you think of some examples of like,
yeah,
I would
sure.
think those would be very different depending on the situation. If I have an issue with my spouse, the questions
right.
I'm going to ask are going to be very different than if I have a situation
sure.
with you as my
sure.
boss. But do you have some examples in mind?
Yeah, you're right. I think it does depend on the circumstance, the situation, and the relationship.
Yeah.
So there's no matrixy that I can like
here's
put together.
Here's the five questions that
yeah,
always work.
Yeah. So you're like, hey, this thing came out. Let me pull this out of my pocket now and read like, okay, this is how I'm going to respond.
Question one.
I think, you know, soft questions are really helpful. There's language like soft language and hard language and mm-hmm. hard language where it basically
can you give
means
examples
like,
of that?
Yeah. So one could be a soft way of saying something could be, when you said this, this is what I heard.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Or you're a jerk, this is what you said.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like of course one is a statement and the other is more of a question. But if you said something, I could be like, hey, Ashley, when you said that back to me,
mm-hmm.
what I felt like I was hearing you say was that you think my idea is really bad.
Mm-hmm.
And that made me feel like you didn't value me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like there are questions that just sounds really soft, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas like, hey, you're a jerk because you said that and that
yes.
that made me mad and You know, we should
just go ahead and say you should never start any conversation with "you're a jerk" if you want to come across as not being a jerk yourself.
And the truth is, I know that most people listening to this won't start the conversation like that, but their tone will say
but
that.
But yeah, you can come in with an accusatory tone. I think one of the things that I've heard too, in like back when I was getting my MDiv and lived at Multnomah, we had a roommate issue. And a couple of my roommates went and met with like the RD or whatever. And they were very specific of making sure, particularly when there's multiple people involved, of making sure to use I statements instead of we statements. So it doesn't feel like the person is getting ganged up against. And of also making sure to qualify, instead of saying like, "you never clean the bathroom" or whatever the issue is, "I feel like you clean the bathroom less than the rest of us."
Right.
And qualifying with "I feel" statements of not making whatever your point is, like, "this is definitely what's true."
Right.
But "this is what I'm perceiving." And kind of to what you were saying, when you do this, this is what I'm perceiving or thinking or understanding. Or when you say this, say whatever, "this is what I'm thinking, feeling, understanding." To kind of, take it back a little bit and to try to not get caught in the personal pieces of the drama triangle, but pointing towards the actual issue.
I think that's great. I think that's very helpful. I was thinking about that phrase, you know, "well, the truth hurts." And I laugh because I'm like, it doesn't have to be rude though. That's
it
what
might still hurt, but you don't have to make it more painful.
That is, the truth hurting is not necessarily like a license to be a jerk or to be rude. But the truth is, like, when I hear the truth, the gospel truth even, it does impact me. And there are moments when, like, but it's good. You know what I mean? Like, it's helpful. I think the scriptures say, "faithful are the wounds of a friend." It's like, its desire is to help restore you and heal you. And so that's part of the posture you have to have in these situations. I think it's also important when we are in the drama triangle, you recognize it, that you continue to ask questions that point back to the issue instead of the person. So it's questions about the thing that happened to depersonalize it. And so if it's an issue about a scheduling conflict that keeps arising, or one person who feels like they're doing more than the other person, talk about the specifics of those issues. So, well, let's talk about that job and when did that job start? And, you know, one of the situations we talked about earlier, the one that we're facing with a, you know, it was like, "hey, why don't you send me an email with a timeline of the things that happened so that as this conversations begin, we have a reference point to be like, well, on this date, this is what was said or this is what was communicated." That begins to take away, "well, I feel like you just don't value me." It's like, all right, well, let's look at this. So it's hard to say you point at the facts, but I would say you try your best to get to the issue and away from the ancillary stuff that is distracting from the primary reason. So
yeah, it's one of the cases where like details are actually very helpful of being able to, if we can look at the details of the situation instead of the personalities of the people, that really helps in making sure that the issue is key instead of the people who are involved.
Okay, but that's a good point too, because this is where personalities are important as well, because having the facts and details don't negate the need for empathy in these conversations.
How you present that should be tailored to the personalities.
And the reality is that even if the facts and details line up and you are right and you hit the deadlines and these are the things that needed to happen, the truth is that it still made someone feel a certain way. And while you're not responsible for their own feelings, you do have to ask the question, like, could my actions, even if I had done everything I was told to do and I did, if they did hurt them, then there is something I need to think about. There is something I need to do, because just because what I'm trying to say is their feelings aren't invalid, even if the facts don't line up. You know what I mean?
Because there's still an issue there. There's still an issue. Something was missed that needs to be addressed. And it honestly may mean that you need to apologize for something, even if you did all the things on paper that you were supposed to do.
Yeah, because it still could have hurt them.
Yeah, the relationship is more important than the... In the end, the relationship is more important than the issue, even though we do want to solve the actual issue.
And of course, this is a perspective on the kingdom of heaven. This is God's heart for people. He sees them beyond what they can produce. And we want to share that, whether you're in the marketplace or you're in education, wherever you are, like, being right And then you cover this in like premarital counseling. Mm-hmm. Being right doesn't always mean you're right.
Yeah, no, you can be right and be very, very
and
wrong.
And still be very wrong. And so that's, again, these are all just frameworks to think about how to handle these situations of the drama triangle. Now, there was one other framework in thinking, and this was about change that I
think
is
helpful. That was actually my favorite part.
Why was it your favorite part?
I think it, so the framework that was given is basically that different people, different personalities process change at different speeds and in different ways.
Right.
So the speaker, Scott, had kind of personalized these different modes. So there's like, let's go Joe, who actually is more like you, Alex, who's ready to like, hey, like if change is coming, like I want to be doing it. I want to be driving it. Let's do it tomorrow. Like, let's get it done. There's like a whatever Willie who's like, I actually don't really care. I'll just kind of go along with whatever. I'm just like, tell me what to do and I'm good. Okay. And then there is the wait a minute Marty, who's more like me, who is like, okay, like let's find out more of the details about this before we do this massive change. So I think for me, what I've noticed as someone who is a little more on the cautious and detail-oriented side is sometimes if I, especially this has happened between you and I in the past, of you've said, hey, let's do this thing. And my immediate answer is, okay, well, if we want to do this thing, we also need to do this, that, and the other thing so that we can make sure that this thing is good. And I think part of the conversation was saying you actually need both because if we don't have you, we probably don't do as many changes and try new things. If we don't have me and some of the like cautiousness, we often jump off a cliff without looking all the way to see all the potential outcomes on the bottom.
Absolutely.
So I thought that was really helpful.
Yeah, I loved it too. I think that you can look at this on like a macro to a micro level because we're living in a time and society has changed a lot.
Yes.
We did talk about this too. Like, what is one word that most people associate with change? It's grief.
Yeah.
It's loss. It's sorrow. It's hard. Right. And you know, we joke like, I like change as long as I'm driving it. It's a lot harder to experience change when someone else is telling me what I have to do now. So those things are hard. Even though I'm probably more flexible and adaptable to change than you are on a quicker level, not overall, but just quicker. That doesn't mean that it doesn't involve grief or loss.
Right.
And that was important to recognize that like that on a macro level, we're living in a society where you can't categorize people into three categories.
No.
That being said, these tools are helpful to see like, someone who's like, all right, hey, like times have changed and now I need a card to go into that restaurant or I need, whatever the issue is, and they're fine with it. That might just be their makeup and that's who they are, you know? And sometimes we attribute virtue or loss of virtue or lack of it to people who are like, all right, cool, whatever. I'll just go with the flow.
Yeah.
Or the people that are slow.
Yeah, they get kind of a bad rap.
Maybe slow is the bad word. I would say methodical.
Yes.
Thoughtful.
Conservative in the non-political version of the term.
Yes. We think of, you know, potentially them as like sticks in the mud, unwilling to change. They're not progressive enough or whatever it is. But those people also, that's who they are. It's their makeup. Yeah.
Well, and everybody brings something valuable to the table. Because one of the things I appreciated about the conversation we had as a staff was a lot of the people who are more on the wait a minute, Marty side of things were like, it's not that we don't want to change or we don't want to help you do this change. It's that we actually want what you're doing to be the best possible version of it.
Yep.
And so we want to take our time to make sure that we have enough time to build something that's going to last and is going to be good and is going to actually like be the vision that you want. Yeah. And make sure that all of the I's are dotted and all the T's are crossed and all that kind of a thing. So being able to have language, especially like some of this stuff is just helpful of being able to identify something and be able to talk about it.
Yeah.
So like if you came in tomorrow and we're like, hey, we're going to completely change the podcast and we're going to do this, that, and the other thing, I'd probably be like, okay, now I could say to you like, all right, this is me being wait a minute, Marty here, but have you thought about this and this and that? And what's your plan for this other thing? Like, and if you have answers to all of those things, then I'll be like, okay, great, let's do it.
Right.
But that's like, if I'm not slowing you down, you probably would jump off a cliff sometimes. And if you weren't pulling me, we probably would never move.
Yeah.
So we actually do need each other in that way. And we need the whatever people too, because sometimes we just need to get off our high horse. And
we also need to like, get caught up in details. It's interesting. You're right. And I think that needing each other from a relational standpoint, from a mission standpoint is important, but also from a learning standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm married to a wait a minute Marty.
Yes.
We'll call her wait a minute Mildred, just because
oh, that's real
all
bad.
Of these were
they were
masculine.
All male names.
So
at least they were all equally terrible male names, I guess. I don't know.
My wife Fallon is amazing, and she is one of the most thoughtful, detail-oriented people on the planet. Mm-hmm. And I remember
she has to be. You guys have four young children.
Yeah, and she works and she homeschools and she like she does all the things, but she keeps it all organized and like she's amazing. She's amazing. Now that being said, when we were dating, I remember somebody told me these fabled words: opposites attract, and then they attack. Right? Uh-huh. Like, and it's not that we would attack each other. I'm not saying that, but the reality is that
there's
thing
friction there
that drew her to me and me to her was the very thing that also annoys us mm-hmm. of each other at times, which is I'm ready to go. Let's come on. Like we'll figure out the details as we're going. Like, and on our first date, this was like, I knew where we were going, but I didn't really know how to get there. And so I went the wrong way down a one-way street.
Oops.
I'll never live that down. I'll never, ever live that down. She's the kind of person that if she was in my shoes, she would have researched the best way to get there, the best time to get there, and called ahead to make sure that it wasn't busy in that time so we could have the right seat.
Mm-hmm.
She would perceive that as thoughtful. So what would it be perceived if I didn't do those things?
That I'm not thoughtful.
Right.
Yes.
So again, obviously we've done work because we've learned. We've had to learn some of these different things. But you know what we've learned over time is that sometimes we do just need to get in the car and go.
Yes.
And we'll figure it out as we go. And the funny thing is the longer I'm around her, the more I'm like her.
Mm-hmm.
The more I want to like research the best path and all those things, right? So I guess what I'm trying to say is that instead of looking at people who are different than you as part of the problem,
mm-hmm.
you should see their difference as
valuable.
Valuable.
Yeah. And sometimes that takes some work, honestly.
All the time it takes.
Because
work.
We all have a tendency to think that our way is the right way.
Yeah.
And honestly, some personalities just rub each other the wrong way. And it's really easy to have miscommunication. But I think that's where a piece of advice that a coworker gave me a long time ago, which was in all things of constantly asking, God, what are you trying to teach me through mm-hmm. this situation or through this person? And I think sometimes God puts people who are opposites or puts difficult people in our lives, not to torture us or torment us,
absolutely
but to help
not.
Us to grow and to really to be able to appreciate that diversity in the body of Christ. Like
absolutely.
There's a reason that the church should be like the weirdest place because we should just attract the weirdest people. And we probably should annoy each other because we're not all the same.
Yeah.
We're brothers and sisters and we
that's
fight
right.
and all the things. But at the end of the day, we're called to love each other and to grow through that and see the value in each and every, what each person brings to the table.
Well, I mean, I have nothing to add to that because that's exactly the point, right? Like these are, we do this because we're talking about how does our faith intersect real life.
Mm-hmm.
Loving people well is learning how to communicate that you love them well
mm-hmm.
and that you're for them. And that often means we have to develop tools for that. So
yeah, that does not often come naturally.
No, it doesn't. And even if it comes naturally for your skill set to the people that receive communication like you do, it won't come naturally to people that are different than you.
Yeah.
But we hope that this podcast was helpful.
We hope so.
We hope we
communicated well about communication.
We hope these tools will be that. They'll just be tools in your tool belt to help you love people better.
Yes. Well, thanks for listening today. We hope you enjoyed this conversation. We do have some exciting news. If you were around this previous Sunday, October 10th, you will know we did a parent Q&R with Kara Powell, who works with youth and has written several books. And she actually is going to be on the podcast with us next week. We were able to grab her for a little bit while she was here between different speaking engagements. And so we're excited to host her. So you don't want to miss that. To make sure that you don't miss that, you can subscribe to the B4 podcast on either Spotify or iTunes. Not only would you get this podcast on Tuesdays, that's our more conversational style podcast, you get the weekly liturgy that drops on Thursdays and our weekly teachings our Sunday weekly teachings, which drop on Mondays. We hope you'll subscribe so that you never miss any of our episodes, and we hope to see you next week.